This is the Seahawkers Podcast, episode 333. I'm Brandon Schultz of the Military Seahawkers, and joining me, he's back, my good buddy and Montana Seahawker, Adam Emmert.
Finally, I made it back. I was on the road there for longer than half a second, so feels good to be back, but I'm also very appreciative of everybody that you were able to talk with, leading up these last final weeks to the draft. So I didn't have to because I didn't know anything about any of these guys.
Yeah,
so,
Rob Staten filled in admirably back-to-back weeks. We covered the offense, we covered the defense, and hey, we even talked about a guy that the Seahawks ended up picking. So it's, it all worked out.
Yeah, Rob's kind of a personal hero of mine because he takes over for this specific part of the football schedule that I feel like I have absolutely the least to offer. So that's awesome.
Yeah, appreciate Rob. And you had some work to do. You had some wheels to grind in the mills of the Pacific Northwest.
Yeah. Yeah. And it wasn't just usually I go and there's a travel day. So like Friday, or I even leave Thursday night for a bit and then work over the weekend and then travel again on Monday and then get back and then we can do a pod. But this was 2 weeks of working through the weekend, travel like 8-10 hours in a day, be back in a mill during the week, travel for a day, be back in the mill. It was a blitzkrieg of wheel grinding. And fortunately, like I said, it happened to coincide with the part of the NFL schedule that I really couldn't offer much to you guys. And it's great to be back so that we can actually talk about the dudes they picked and you can watch a little bit on them and get a little bit better feel of where the Seahawks are going and how these guys are going to fit.
It's great that you're back. Heck, it's great to be alive, Adam. Kyle Shanahan ahead of the weekend said, we were guaranteed to live through the weekend. So we made it. We made it, everybody.
Hey, he wasn't wrong. but that was a pretty hilarious press conference. And I do appreciate some of his players checking in with them and just letting them know, like Mark Safe from Kyle Shanahan declaring them dead on Sunday,
I was a little worried about Jimmy going into the weekend that Shanahan was not willing to guarantee his personal safety, but works out. Nobody died.
Yep. Nobody died. And it's probably a good thing that they kept Jimmy G around for this season.
It is. I know we want to get into the Seahawks players, but maybe we should start out with the San Francisco 49ers
or we can save that for the back half.
Okay. Let's save it for the back half. But it's interesting. The 49ers probably had the most interesting draft of any team in the NFC West.
Interesting. Okay. I did not follow their draft picks super carefully. Obviously, I followed number 3 pretty closely.
Oh, yeah. That's the only one that matters.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Well, let's get into the Seahawks draft class. The Seahawks, they started with just 3 picks. It was the lowest number that they've ever had going into the draft. And you had to have thought that John Schneider would find a way to make some moves and accumulate draft picks. But you know what? He didn't do it. He stayed put with their second round pick. Yes, they added a pick by moving back in the 4th round, but then they used that to package up and get their 3rd pick in the 6th round. Screwed pick 250. We're just going to finish off this draft day in the 6th round. And they finished with 3 guys. It was the lowest in franchise history. There were 2 classes back in, I think, 94 and 97. For the Seahawks, where they picked 5 guys. And so Schneider beat it by 2 picks, and he has a lot of pressure on him now because out of those classes, Adam, can you remember which 2 Hall of Famers came out of those 2 draft classes that were where they had a record low franchise picks?
No, I have no idea.
Both offensive linemen, Kevin Mawai in 94 in the 2nd round, okay, and Walter Jones in 97.
All right. Okay. If you'd have given me the offensive lineman hit, I would have gotten 50% of those correct.
I would hope so.
I always forget Kevin Mawai started out with us or was drafted by us, right? Yeah. But because he's more famous as a Jet.
He is. But he's our Hall of Fame offensive lineman, just like Steve Hutchinson.
All right. Hey, there's an argument to be made there for Hutch, no doubt about it. Very interesting, though, that John wasn't able to get more than the 3 picks. I think just like you had stated, everybody and their dog thought that he was going to trade back. And he did trade back. He just ended up trading back up.
Right.
Later in the draft. So, I guess at one point he would have had an extra pick there. But I was this whole week and everything leading up to the draft and the draft itself, this was the least stressful draft that I can remember in Seahawks history in a long time. I didn't have to care about who we were going to waste a first round pick on. I didn't have to care about none of that crap. It was great. I enjoyed just being like, oh, well, that guy got picked. He might work. Cool. That's how I felt about the draft this year.
Every single one of these guys, that's how you feel like it might work out. And depending on which network you were watching, Adam, you might have been really surprised if you were watching ESPN when the Seahawks took Dwayne Eskridge out of Western Michigan, because Mel Kiper, he had him, I think, even going into round two as his second best receiver available going into day two. So if you were watching that, you're like, oh, well, he's on Mel's board, so they're probably going to take a guy that's like round four or round five type of draft pick here at the end of the second round. But no, they picked one of Kiper's guys, Dwayne Eskridge.
They did. And you did see Eskridge's grade, I guess, draft grade, all over the map.
Oh, yeah.
Which I think actually speaks to why John Schneider was comfortable in getting rid of as many picks as possible for this year for proven guys, right? We talked about it coming into this draft and in the beginning of the offseason being, hey, or even when the Jamal Adams trade went down, you don't want these picks this year because it's such an unknown with all of the weird schedules and truncated seasons and all of that stuff. Not a lot of film on a lot of guys. It's going to be
a lot of guys staying in school next year.
Right, right. So a very funky draft and hard to predict. And that's why I think you saw players kind of go all sorts of rounds differently than what they were projected at. And then not only that, but have all the projections be wildly different, right? I mean, usually they're fairly close. Most people are within a round or two of each other in terms of how they project a pick. Not this year, man. And Eskridge is a fine example of that. And you definitely got a mixed bag of reaction from Seahawks fans, right? There's some people who have been pounding the table for that third wide receiver this offseason. And then you have other people who've been pounding the table for the offensive line. I'm interested to hear what your gut reaction was, because I definitely had a strong one.
So Clinton Bonner and I, we were doing a live locker room chat while the second round was going on. And we were going to kind of hang in there for just the first part. But then, it got closer and closer to the Seahawks pick. And we're like, screw it. We're going to do this thing and just take it all the way to the pick. And as the board was falling in that second round, especially center, you could see guys coming down that you didn't think that they were going to be there. There was Creed Humphrey from Oklahoma. There was the center from Ohio State. And both of those guys end up going to Kansas City and Green Bay, who both needed centers too at the end of the second round. But seeing those guys.
Did the Vikings pick one as well?
I think.
Right at the bottom of the second?
Or did the Vikings take the Alabama dude up toward the top of the second?
That might be what it was. I don't know. I just was trying to figure out who was taking guys.
Because the Alabama center was the guy that I think was considered to be the top center. And he went, I think, in the first 10 to 15 picks in the second round. But yeah.
Okay.
So three centers in that round, essentially in the area of where the Seahawks were drafting. It looked like they were going to get one of the better ones if they wanted. The Rams, they needed a center too. And I just had a feeling that there was that potential that it could go that way. But then the Seahawks take Eskridge and the Rams take Tutu Atwell, who is an even smaller wide receiver. I think Seahawks fans were probably surprised, not that they took wide receiver, but they went so, 5'8" guy, 190 pounds, not a big wide receiver. But I think that, at least when Clinton and I were talking in the offseason, it felt like for what the Rams like to do, you like to have that quick third wide receiver that can, juke guys out of their shoes and be that guy that maybe Tyler Lockett was more so in his early days of his Seahawks career.
Or even Doug Baldwin, right? I mean, Doug Baldwin was 5'10 and 190.
Yeah.
And what's Eskridge? I mean, you said 5'8". I've seen 5'8 to 5'10". So I don't know. He's five something and, five to the tall, to the medium tallish end of things.
He's not 5'5" like Tutu Atwell, who is 155 pounds.
Right. Yeah. And I think the point here is that he's 190. He's 190. Dude's built. Look up some of the guys that have been kind of lighting the league up this last couple of years, and they're built just like Eskridge. Take a look at Tyreek Hill's height and weight. Oh, yeah. What does that tell you?
Yeah, it's right
it's
in there.
It's identical.
Yeah.
It's identical. Now, the other thing, when I flipped on some of Eskridge's, you know, highlights and tape and all that, dude can legit fly. That track speed that showed up in his 40, it really does show up on film. And he does seem to have that short area quickness. You know, he's got good sack, and it's interesting to see the Seahawks kind of go more towards that receiver, because I think that's the trend in the league going forward. When you think about all the pass happy rules and everything, it's a lot easier just to kind of run with a dude who can just has long strides and just goes down the field in that sort of thing, right? Without interfering according to the rules today. It's way more difficult when guys can stop on a dime and change direction and then fly. So I think there's a reason why you go for those smaller receivers. And that's where the Seahawks went with this. And initially, my gut was, oh, they didn't take the offensive lineman. Darn it. And I was mad. I wanted to be mad. I wanted to be mad about the Eskridge pick. I really did when I turned on his stuff. Like, I had a freaking little receiver. Well, screw this guy. This isn't what we needed. You know, Freddie Swain's fine. This is stupid. And I started watching his tape and I was like, ooh, that's going to be fun. And I think what John did when he made the calculation for that pick was the upgrade of Eskridge over whoever was going to play wide receiver number three. Mm-hmm. The gap of that was much larger than the gap between Ethan Posick and Creed Humphrey or whoever else, right?
Right.
Like, that gap was much smaller. So in his mind, I think we got more value that way.
And I can see that. And hearing Pete and John after the draft in their press conferences, it sounded like, in terms of, they felt that they had done enough work ahead of the draft on the offensive line that they didn't need to, you know, go in with a huge need. And I still think that overall, I would have liked to, and, you know, we won't know for 3-4 years down the road, but I think I still would have liked, especially seeing some of the undrafted free agent wide receivers that they are able to pick up. I think I still would have liked to see offensive line, especially center in the second round.
I guess. I mean, Posick is supposedly the weak link of that line, right? I think we all kind of agree on that as fans.
Yeah.
At this point, Gabe Jackson's yet to be proven. I mean, he could end up being the weak link. I mean, Brandon Shell has a hard time staying on the field. Maybe he's the weak link. I mean, however you want to look at it. But I think Posick is a middle of the road center.
He's fine. And with the guys at the end of the second round, they could end up being just fine second round player. And Posick was drafted in the second round. So Creed Humphrey and the dude from Ohio State, yeah, they could end up being exactly as talented 3-4 years down the road, and may even be worse coming out their rookie season. But I just feel like with Humphrey, you know, playing, you know, 5-year dude at Oklahoma, I think he started for at least 4 of the 5 years, maybe. But yeah, just a lot of experience there that I would have been more comfortable there. And just like I said, with the other positions they were able to go out and get, but I can see the case for it too. And I mean, I was making the case going into the draft that I'd be fine with them going receiver early too, because you have Tyler Lockett. Yes, you have DK Metcalf, but you don't have depth. So if you have an injury to one of those positions, who's going to be a guy that you can go and count on? And if you're talking about either one of those two guys paired with Freddie Swain as the number two, then you start getting a little nervous for a few games until they're able to get back when, okay, I look at the track record of the Seahawks and picking receivers in the second round, and you're talking about Golden Tate and DK Metcalf and Paul Richardson, probably the least impactful of the second round wide receivers. Tyler Lockett taken early third round, and they're able to spot the talent and pick it in those areas. They have a good track record of it. So that makes me happy.
That was literally something that I thought about. It's like, damn, you know, they've done really well picking receivers in the second round, exactly how you pointed it out. And I always seem to forget that Tyler was a third round pick. I always think of him as a second round pick for whatever reason in my head, which obviously I'm wrong about. But
you pick number 69. Yeah, how can you forget that?
I don't know, but it just seems to happen that way for me. But think about it in these terms, in that kind of Ram style offense. I mean, you're going to be in three wide receiver personnel a lot in that deal there. And Eskridge is really a physical guy, and he can block and he can do a lot of the things that you're going to need that slot receiver to do. I think it's really exciting to think about the idea that there's a possibility that Tyler Lockett's going to be your slowest receiver on the field. Tyler Lockett.
Yeah. And if that's your slowest wide receiver on the field, yeah, not a bad deal, right?
That's incredible. And then you pair that with Everett going out there. And I think the other thing that you have to take into account here is this is a bit of a response to Russell Wilson's offseason hissy fit. This is a bit of a response to that. It wasn't all about just, I want to be protected better. He was also pissed because, well, when I say I want Antonio Brown, we get Antonio Brown. I say we need more here, more that he just wants more weapons.
And well, that was this last exactly offseason that he talked about weapons too. So, I mean, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And this is the type of stuff we're hearing with this half manufactured Aaron Rodgers drama as well, right? That, you know, part of the pissiness there is, and I think this part of it's real, them drafting primarily defensive players early on in the draft for a very long time. And so I think this is part of Pete and John looking at Russ and being like, all right, we heard you. We had our conversation, our come to Jesus moment, and we are going to change some things. And listening to Pete talk in the presser too, I think he's deferring a lot to Waldron and Russ, how this offense is going to function. And then also deferring to John and being like, all right, you pick the dudes to fit that system that they are going to run. Mm-hmm. And instead of like Pete being all up in there.
Yeah. You definitely got some of those clues just from the way that Pete talked in within those pre-draft and post-draft press conferences.
Absolutely. So I actually ended up really liking the pick. I think he has a high probability to work. I think will have an impact on this season, a fairly major impact on this season. And I think that's exciting. Look, whatever happens this year with this team, because holy smokes, you could say 9-7 to undefeated, and I'd believe you this year, what this team is capable of. I think what we really need to see is Russ and company really lighten it up in being consistent from beginning to end of the season, wherever that takes us.
I'll guarantee you one thing. This team will not finish 9-7.
Yeah, it's probably true.
10-7, right. Maybe 9-8, but not.
Look, this is going to screw with my head. This new 17.
This is like the Oakland Raiders and the LA Chargers and the San Diego Chargers. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not dealing well with all this change in the NFL.
It'll be years before we start referring to records as within the 17 game.
Right, where the math works. Right. Yeah, that ain't happening anytime soon. So apologize in advance.
Now I'll just keep calling you out on it. It's fun for me. I've started to listen for it now because it's, I don't know. Maybe it'll stop being funny when listeners are like, okay, Brandon, we get it. You're all on top of the 17 game schedule thing.
Yeah,
but the until rest then, of us are, I'm going with it.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, you own this. I'm glad that you're owning this.
One of the things that stood out to me watching the Dwayne Eskridge highlights, it was long touchdown against Toledo, long touchdown against Northern Illinois, long touchdown against Central Michigan, you know, highlight against Ball State. And you know, yeah, the MAC, it's not an FCS conference, but it's one of the lower ones for the FBS.
You know, here's the thing. People talk about this level of competition thing all the time. And I think that it matters a little less than people might think when you're trying to do the evaluations, when you're looking at the tape. The idea isn't okay. Well, I mean, it does present a factor, right? Like if he's torching dudes like by 10 yards every play, you're like, okay, that's what do you take from that? But for me, what made it so I wasn't concerned was that looking at the film with Eskridge, one of the things was when the DB, even if he was a lesser talented DB and couldn't always be in the correct position to defend the pass, when he did happen to be in the correct position to defend the pass and it was a contested ball, he was great at getting those contested balls. Like he really does have good hands. The other thing that I saw was on stop routes and comebacks and things like that, he had a really sudden stop and start back towards the quarterback. And I don't care if you were, if you play in the MAC or if you play in the SEC, I don't care who you are. You ain't covering that. That's a, that's an uncoverable thing when you can explode back to the ball that way. And when it, the quarterback hits you on time, it's just uncoverable. So I looked at a couple of those things, the long touchdowns on the slants, like he, that was a lot. We're going to see a lot of slants in this offense. Slants and boots. This is coming. Like you lock it up. That's what's coming with this offense. He runs a slant well. He's very fast. Do I think he's going to take it 80 yard house calls like every game, every other game? Absolutely freaking not. It's not going to happen. But he's a fairly poor man's Tyreek Hill. Yeah. And I think having that sort of guy out there is really cool. I'm really excited about it.
You know, in the draft guide, I feel like poor man's Tyreek Hill is kind of what's been compared to him. And I think that as you see that with Kansas City, more and more teams want to go with that. I mean, even the Rams going with their super small wide receiver right after the Seahawks. So, yeah, I'm curious to see how he's going to work in the NFL. And I'm excited. Yeah, I'm excited about the pick. I would have liked to say center, but that's fine. I'm fine with it.
Yeah. And look.
And besides, Adam, I was lobbying for the Oklahoma guy with the first pick as the center, but then the Seahawks, they go and they pick an Oklahoma guy with their fourth round pick.
Yeah, this was the surprising one.
This was really surprising.
Yeah, I just the idea that they took a cornerback who probably is shorter than most fourth graders. Like that's it does not compute. It just does not compute. We've seen it over and over again with what they're doing. It just doesn't make any sense. It's not what Pete wants, right? But then I started to think about it, and this is where it does make sense. The Seahawks were picking those long, lanky corners who maybe didn't run quite as fast or have the change of direction in the hips and all that, right? Back early on during Pete and John's tenure.
Oh, yeah.
And the reason why was not only did they like the style of that and how they could use them, right? But they were doing that because there was an inefficiency in the draft market. They were thought of as guys who couldn't keep up, guys who couldn't move, right? And so they were available late in the draft. And so they were able to pick up guys and turn them into functional starters from late in the draft early on. And then
they were considered to be too tall.
Yes.
And too slow. Right.
Yeah. And then the whole league changed. They saw the success that Pete and John had with this. And everybody started trying to pick up that guy with those physical traits. So now when they go and look at the draft, the guys that are undervalued are the really fast, physical, short guys who actually match up better with the way the league is trending receiver-wise.
Right, with Tyreek Hill and Cooper Kupp and these smaller, quick receivers. Yeah. And you see that's in these last two or three years when they play the Rams. That's what you see, right? The Rams offense is built in a way to attack the, you know, these slower corners that just do the quick inside slants that the bigger guys, they can't, they're not sticky enough to be on those guys. And that's how the Seahawks defense has been getting beat. So yes, the thing that impressed me about this pick one was that they took an Oklahoma guy for the first time ever in history, apart from, well, Bosworth was in the supplemental draft. And this is the first time in franchise history they've ever taken an Oklahoma guy in just the regular draft. So
how's your Oklahoma boner right now? Is it good? Do we need to call a doctor? No, has it been good. Longer than 7 days? No.
Well, and let me tell you,
I knew you were excited about this. I did.
I'll tell you one reason why a couple reasons why I'm excited. A couple reasons why I wasn't excited because Oklahoma's defense, if you've ever watched, they're not good. The idea of picking an Oklahoma player from the defense, especially in the secondary, where I feel like they're giving up 500 passing yards to every single team that they face. And I tune out defense because this is, as I watch Oklahoma football, I don't want to be upset like the whole time. Like I just want to be entertained. And so I wait for them to be on offense and, you know, watch them, you know, blow out a team or stay, you know, the opposing team will score a touchdown. Oklahoma will score a touchdown. It's just back and forth the whole game.
But spoken like a true consumer of college football right there.
Yeah. But the thing is that Brown, and this won't sound like an impressive stat in terms of NFL numbers, But sure. But Brown never allowed more than 70 yards in coverage in any game over the last two seasons. And yeah, 70 yards for NFL, that's a lot. But when you're giving up 500, 600 passing yards to every team that you face, 70 yards is good.
It actually is in the pinball numbers that are college football, right? I mean, when you have people like Jalen Hurts playing quarterback and lighting up the, you know, lighting up the scoreboard, like, yeah, there's something seriously wrong with this.
And but, on top of that, Brown had the lowest passer rating allowed, this according to PFF, lowest passer rating allowed in single coverage, so man on man, in the 2021 draft class out of all the corners. And it was a 26.9 passer rating allowed. So in man-to-man situations, he's been impressive.
Yeah, he has. This is definitely one of those, I guess we'll see picks to me. I'm definitely not sold at all. The Eskridge pick, that was one that I really, when I looked at it, I was like, man, I'm into this. I can really see how this is going to work. With Trey Brown, I'm like, maybe.
Yeah, you've got it backwards. I don't want to set expectations too high for Trey Brown, but I do think it's appropriate to refer to him as future Hall of Fame corner Trey Brown every time we talk about him.
I see. Okay. Well, one of us will do that, and the other will be like, maybe. But the thing is, too, is that, I mean, you've seen the Seahawks bring in a few different players, and there's rumors of a Sherman reunion as well. So you may not be relying on him right out of the gates.
Pete swatted that Sherman reunion down in the post-draft press conference.
Did he?
Yeah. He's like, oh, yeah, I talk to him all the time. But, you know, it could happen. It might not.
It's totally happening.
Yeah. He did tease something, though. He's ahead of the draft. He's like, there's going to be a signing coming here pretty soon. I can't tell you what it is, but something's happening. And we're still waiting for it.
Mm-hmm. Yep, we are. Some of KJ, us are waiting. Some of us,
Sherman, got to be one of those guys, right?
If not both, I would love to see both.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be great. So Trey Brown, interesting pick outside of the mold. And you can see Pete and John changing their MO. And I think the reason was ultimately everybody's picking the guys that they used to pick. And so now you can get a better dude later that doesn't fit that size profile that you normally go for.
One thing that jumped out at me is seeing Horn from South Carolina, one of the first corners off the board. And yeah, he has the size, but man,
I was not
a fan of that pick. I thought the Broncos made a better pick going with Surtain.
No, they didn't. Broncos catfishing blew it. Justin Fields fell into their laps.
Justin Fields fell past everybody.
Unbelievable.
Just about every team that could have used a quarterback who passed on him after the 49ers, including the 49ers.
Yeah. We'll talk the quarterbacks when we talk the Niners and all that, because I have thoughts. I didn't get to list my order of quarterbacks before the draft.
Haven't played an NFL snap.
Yeah. So I can at least give you my impressions.
Yeah.
And we'll go from there. But Trey Brown, good value, I think, at that spot. And we'll see what happens with him going forward, which leads us to The Rock Jr.
Stone Forsythe. Yeah. Can you smell what the stone is cooking?
Yeah. It's a pizza, dude. It's stone fired pizza. I got it. Pizza stone. Or is it wood fired pizza on a pizza stone? I think that's how that works.
I don't even know where you're going with that, but.
Wood fired, there's a pizza stone that you put in the oven.
I'm familiar with a pizza stone.
Right. But you smell what the stone is cooking?
Oh, it's cooking pizza.
Cooking pizza. Yeah.
All right. Well, Stone Forsythe is a guy that it sounded like they were really excited about the potential of drafting. John Schneider, after the draft, said that both Pete Carroll and Steve Hutchinson were pacing back and forth in front of him in the sixth round as they were trying to move up in that round to be able to pick Stone Forsythe. And he was a guy that, you know, I was watching bootleg football with EJ Snyder and Brett Coleman, and you know, they kept referencing some of these tackles who were falling down the board, and you know, they couldn't believe that Stone Forsythe was still there in the sixth round. But he has his issues, which is why he fell to that round. But you know, it's as a developmental type tackle and a guy who has excelled more on the pass blocking side than the run blocking side. Here's another surprise for Pete and John, mm-hmm. is that they mm-hmm. went and they took a tackle who was better at pass blocking than run blocking.
Right. And then they also selected with their original sixth round pick, Gabe Jackson, who is a, you know, more of a pass blocker than a run blocker.
Gabe Jackson was the fifth round pick.
No, they traded a sixth for him, didn't they?
No, the sixth was the one that they traded for Dunlap.
Oh, I had him flip-flopped in my head. Thank you for correcting me. Yes. So, yeah. But to your point, being more conscientious about picking guys who maybe aren't exactly maulers, but are definitely better in pass protection. And I think that speaks to the direction that they want to go.
Yeah. And with Forsythe being a project more so, and then not a guy that you would expect to, although listening to Brett and EJ, Brett was like, oh, they're just going to plug him in at right tackle. He's going to be the guy over Shell, which I thought was kind of surprising.
Okay. I mean, maybe, but
sure. It'd be great if it happened, if they got him into camp and they said, oh, hey, you're our starting right tackle. Because as much as EJ tried to make it sound like Forsythe was, I don't know, the second coming of Jimmy Graham, except at tackle in his run blocking ability. I went back and I watched some of the games because LaMichael Pirine came out of Florida. Mm-hmm. And so I watched some of the Pirine tape. And yeah, there were some times where he kind of got out in space and he didn't know who to block. But I mean, that wasn't quite as concerning to me when you're in the second level and, you know, oh, do I go to this linebacker or this safety? I mean, dudes right. have trouble with that anyway.
They do. And he is going to struggle with that a little bit more than other guys in terms of run blocking, just because he's tall and it's just tough to get the leverage, right? But also, you have to think that most of these edge rushers that you're dealing with, the guys who play the edge position, are they getting shorter or taller?
Oh, they're getting taller. Yeah.
They're getting taller with longer arms and all that stuff. So that disadvantage of being a very tall guy starts to dissipate a little bit with that. So I think that's kind of a reactionary thing with Pete and John with this pick here. And also, too, look, for what he was able to accomplish at Florida and, you know, the type of potential that he has to pick him up where they did.
Catfish!
Duh. You just make that pick. It's a great value pick. I think everybody that's a 12 ought to be excited about it.
Oh, yeah. And whoever you're going to get with the 250th pick, you could have gotten as an undrafted free agent anyway.
Right.
Probably.
Right.
Which, I mean, yeah, there was maybe a running back that came off the board that you go, oh, well, that guy would have been interesting after in that area. But
sure.
OK.
Yeah. But Pete and John seem to kind of crush it in the undrafted free agent market as well, too. So that's been fun. That I'm sure we'll kind of get into some of those guys. But
I counted four guys that I'm kind of excited about.
OK. OK. I got two.
OK.
And we'll kind of go from there. But it was definitely interesting that part of the draft strategy this year was understanding, okay, well, we don't have a lot of picks. However, that does allow guys to come in as undrafted guys and really have an opportunity to compete. There's just fewer dudes trying to get on the back end of the roster, right?
I think I would tend to agree that they filled out the roster fairly effectively going into it. Now, mm-hmm. you know, did they have all the depth at corner that I would like? Yes, if they signed Sherman, then I'd feel a lot better. Even still, you're not going to find a guy, even maybe probably at the end of the second round, maybe there would have been a guy where you could say that guy steps in and is similar to Shaquille Griffin in his rookie year, where you can feel comfortable about him starting right away. But
I'm just not worried. They always find somebody. I mean, who of us were pinning our hopes on DJ Reed being like a great replacement on the right side? Like our number two corner. Who thought that was happening?
There's been years where it's been Kerry Williams. And then, you know, yeah, there were times this year with Quentin Dunbar where you're like, and he was hurt, but yeah. And those are the two guys that come to mind in the last, 10 years.
Right. But then they also seem to figure it out and find a guy that you just never thought of to come in and actually do the job that those two free agents were incapable of doing. So I have a lot of trust with Pete and John when it comes to the secondary, I guess.
And then other than that, it's offensive line, but you're still saying to yourself, well, halfway through the year, we were talking about how this is the best offensive line that Russell Wilson has had in recent memory. So, and they're bringing back everybody.
Yeah.
Mike Iupati, who retired, but you got Gabe Jackson, who is an accomplished veteran, at least to the level of, he can at least fill in what Iupati was last year. But another piece of news, it sounds like Damian Lewis is going to move over to the left side next to Dwayne Brown, and Gabe Jackson's going to stay at right guard where he's been playing historically for Oakland or Las Vegas. And so you do have a position shift there for Damian Lewis.
Okay. I wondered a little bit about that. Did Lewis play left guard or right guard in college? It was right guard, wasn't it?
Right guard at LSU, yeah.
Okay. Well, you're under his belt, a very physical guy. I think he'll be fine making that transition. That still feels like an upgrade over Iupati.
Sure.
Yeah. At that stage in his career.
And you have him now learning next to Dwayne Brown, whereas you have Brandon Schell next to veteran Gabe Jackson. Yeah, it might balance out the line better. I don't know. We'll see.
It should be a functional offensive line. And then with a system that is a little quicker in which you get the ball out, and also with all the movement in the pocket that I think Waldron's going to implement, I think it's going to be fine. And then Chris Carson, if he could ever put together that one healthy year, I mean, holy schmoly, it'd be awesome. I mean, he could make up for some of those run blocking deficiencies, I would think, especially if they're throwing the crap out of the ball and it scares the hell out of teams. Like, that just opens everything up for Chris Carson.
Yeah, I'm excited about seeing what the offense will do. The defense, I feel like with the amount of work that they've put into the defensive line now, I think, let's see, did they sign Aldon Smith by the time the last time we chatted? I feel like a lot has happened with Aldon Smith just in the weeks since we talked about him.
I guess
last.
I lost a little track of that story after hearing he was in trouble again. Like, what happened?
And I don't know the full story. I don't even know if any of us know the full story, but what it sounded like is that the dude was maybe beating on his sister and he went after the dude. And that was, yeah.
So maybe like a 4-game suspension?
Maybe.
But we didn't cut him, did we?
I don't think so.
Yeah.
Because he does have some domestic abuse in his past where he bit his wife's wrist or something like that. Or is it?
I don't remember exactly what it was. I remember thinking he was a piece of catfish at the time. So if it is something related to that, right? Yeah. Where he's thumping on a lady, screw that guy and he can be off the team immediately. But if it's something like, somebody was beating on my sister and so I hunted him down, I have a very different feeling about that.
It's a different situation for sure.
Yeah.
Like, did the guy deserve it? Like, that plays into it.
Yeah. If my brother-in-law, who never would because he's an awesome, awesome guy and a cop to boot. If I found out he was beating on my sister, I've got a lot of Forest Service land around me that can hide a lot of shallow graves.
Just beware.
Yeah, exactly. So there's that. But yes, you feel like with the work that's been done on the defensive line, and then they bring in Mdichke or whatever the hell his last name is.
Kimdiche, yeah.
Kimdiche and
you don't need
Kombucha.
To pronounce the N, but yes.
All right. Well, Bobbert. That's what he's gonna get called. Is just Bobbert. that was one of those settings where you're like,
Okay. Sure.
Yeah, whatever. The dude's a chronic underachiever.
It's like the Browns signing Malik McDowell.
Yeah. And you just kind of laugh your ass off. I laughed my ass off when the Cardinals drafted him. And didn't they draft him with a first?
At the end of the first round. Yeah.
I remember making fun of them relentlessly. And that turned out to be right. But you do think that with the effort they put in on the defensive line, Jordan Brooks coming back, you know, in his second year, Wags being Wags.
KJ Wright signing around the corner.
I feel like that has to be coming. I think they're going to be okay. I do feel like this team can be the defense of the second half of the year. In Pete's tenure, it's more often than not the defense looks like the second half of the year than the first. And so I'm going to bank on that.
I think, and if they don't sign KJ Wright, Yeah, because hearing from Pete and John, they definitely sounded surprised that KJ was still available. They said that we thought he'd be signed by somebody by now.
And absolutely.
I would agree with that, too. And it's almost as if they've decided that they were moving on. So they may have to rethink those plans if he would be available. It wouldn't surprise me, though, that after the draft, when you know teams like Baltimore are very, they pay attention to that comp pick formula. Mm-hmm. And if they see, you know, players like Sherman and KJ as those guys that they have that middle tier type salary, but they don't want to lose out on a potential future draft pick because that's the way they like to play the game in the offseason. Maybe that happens. And it wouldn't surprise me if Pete and John are just kind of set on moving on, Pete especially, because seeing the way that the defense may evolve, you know, being a nickel a lot more with having a guy like Jamal Adams on the field, having Marquise Blair coming back this season, having, you know, the smaller corners. I wonder if they're going to go more with the man-to-man type corners like Brown and DJ Reed, and then make it so you're able to blitz a lot more with that defensive line.
Do a lot with that big nickel idea, having the third safety
right
out there. And that really plays well into Jamal Adams' game, right?
Right.
Getting him down into the box and being that de facto third linebacker in blitzer. Yeah, I mean, I could see that. I do think that you heard KJ say, well, I'm not taking a hometown discount to come back to Seattle. And it's like, well, here's the thing. The market may make you take a deal that feels like a hometown discount, because that's kind of where it feels right now with him.
It does. And maybe it is.
And there's a number in mind.
Just a 1-year deal. And
yeah,
I'd be happy to have him back. He was outstanding last year.
Absolutely. I think the Seahawks have a number in mind to where it makes sense for them to be able to bring KJ back. And if he falls to that number in terms of the market, then great. They'll do it. But they're definitely not stressing over it. I feel that way about it.
So you talked about the Khadijah signing. They bring back Pierre Desir, who was with the Seahawks for a little bit. He was on the practice squad, I think, in 2016. He was looking pretty good that 2017 year, and just missed out on making the cut. Ended up going to Indianapolis and having a pretty solid 2017 with them. They ended up signing him to a 3-year contract, guaranteed $12 million. Then he kind of fell off a little bit. He was not good with the Jets, according to Jets fans, last season. But they're bringing him back in the Pete Carroll system, and we'll see if he can play some corner. Geno Smith coming back as the backup quarterback. Mm-hmm. And I guess other personnel news was that Rashad Penny, they declined his 5th-year option.
Oh, color me stunned on that one. But as far as Desir goes, I just want to thank the New York Jets for driving down the value of good players or potentially good players so that we can get them on the cheap. I just thank you. Thank you for what you do for us.
We have something to be thankful for from the Jets, although that could change now that they have new coaching, but we'll see.
We're going to find out right quick if Robert Saleh is just a really great looking dude on a sideline that can go rah rah real well, or if he's a football mind. We're going to find out
who can lead a team, right?
Mm-hmm.
We'll see.
So I guess that leaves us with the undrafted guys.
Yeah. Who should we talk about first? Got two wide receivers that we could talk about. Got an offensive lineman. It's kind of interesting.
I'm fired up about Terry.
Tomorrow,
wide receiver out of FSU.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is it Tamorian?
Tamorian, I think.
Tamarian? Okay. Dude, that was one of those. I was like, who's this guy? All right. You know, let's see.
Yeah. Clicking on the YouTube videos.
Right. Look, I just put on the highlight package, right? Which of course you're going to get the guy's best, but holy balls. I mean, just the amount of contested catches, twisting his body in the air, being shifty when he's got the ball in his hands, being huge. Just being a big guy.
Yeah.
I didn't know what this is what I usually do with these draft picks. I don't look up anything about him, and I don't want to know what people thought about draft grades and things of that. Right. I just want to turn it on and see what this guy is.
Can this guy play?
Yeah. I was like, is this guy really tall? He looks really tall. Holy crap, he's fast. Is he really fast? Because he looks really fast. And then you go and you confirm. You're like, holy crap. Yeah, this guy's like 6'3 and he's scooting. And with the ball skills and just what he can do with the ball in his hand as a runner, holy smokes. Now, what you find out is that consistency may not be his thing. And that's maybe why he became an undrafted guy. But then again, guys were talking about him going pretty high. I'm fired up about Terry. I think he has an excellent chance to be a real contributor.
After the 2019 season, there were people projecting him in the first round, you know, toward the end of the first round, but as a first round wide receiver. Now, he fell off last year. He had some knee injuries. I think he's had two of them. And so there are medical issues, and we saw a lot of guys with medical issues fall late into the draft and also out of the draft. So that could be the case here. There's also, I saw some things saying that, you know, he's gotten into some blowups with coaches and there might be practice ethic type, you know, work ethic issues associated too. So I don't know anything about that. But when you watch the guy play, and I even went and watched some of the actual games, and I remember it because I remember watching Cam Akers tape for Florida State and how terrible that FSU offensive line is. And so a lot of those catches that he made, it's because the quarterback was dropping back and he had zero time to throw. So he's just tossing it up essentially. And, you know, and so that made for a lot of those contested catches. But I looked at Tamari and Terry and I saw a guy who can come in and fill David Moore's role.
Oh yeah. If not,
more so, yeah, right? David Moore plus.
Oh, big time. Because at the end of his big highlight package film on the YouTubes, he's blowing dudes up as a gunner. Like just smoking dudes.
That was the other thing about Eskridge and Trey Brown. And so a lot of special teams ability within these picks. Mm-hmm. And even in his highlights too, because I was watching some of that Cam Akers highlight stuff. Terry is a run blocker.
Very physical. All these guys, very physical. And it's also cool to think about all of these different guys and their return ability. Mm-hmm. We've been needing a returner. Make sure that we don't have DJ Reed or Tyler Lockett out there. I don't want that. I would much rather have, you know, your third, fourth, fifth receiver that's out there doing that sort of thing. Because if they get blowed up, you're not hurting that bad on the offensive side of thing. You mentioned that Terry had the knee injury his last year, so he had to overcome that. And you also mentioned, and I think rightly so, overcoming FSU's offense. The scheme's terrible. The offensive line was terrible. The quarterbacks were terrible. And you're like, how come he's not consistent?
He had over 1,000 yards receiving in that 2019 season, which is pretty amazing.
Magically. Yeah, that was magic. So, yeah, I really liked him. And then especially comparing him to the kid out of the Jackrabbit College.
Oh, yeah. Cade Johnson, South Dakota mm-hmm. State.
Yeah, the Jackrabbits.
Yeah, and I don't think that they're as comparable as Cade Johnson is comparable to Eskridge.
Absolutely. Yeah, they're definitely more a size comparison. Their game is similar-ish.
Yeah, shifty dudes that have speed.
Yeah, Cade Johnson's not shifty. Everything he does is like a nice, it's like turning the Titanic when he's running around, you know, just these nice sweeping turns. I mean, if you're on a ski slope, he would look beautiful doing it out there. Right.
There was enough suddenness in the Senior Bowl that every dude covering him in the Senior Bowl seemingly fell down while trying to cover him.
Was it terrible turf? Were they playing in Washington or something?
I don't know. It was apparently not terrible for Johnson.
I have a hard time believing it because, man, his South Dakota stuff, like it just was him just kind of not lollygagging. He's running hard, but just kind of weaving around the field and just kind of going places.
Well, you know, when you have to go up against North Dakota State cornerbacks, it's not like you have to make any sudden movements to get open.
I don't know. The Montana State receivers couldn't get open against the North Dakota guys. So you have to do something, I guess.
But yeah, he's another guy with return ability. And I think he could be one of those guys to compete with Dwayne Eskridge.
Sure. I think he's going to beat out Ursua to be on the practice squad.
There you go.
That'd be my guess.
Sorry, Clinton.
Hey, I'm sad about that too. I actually like Ursua, but you know.
Oh, that was the other thing about Eskridge. Everybody was complaining that, oh my gosh, this guy's 24 years old. What an old receiver he is, coming out of college at 24.
Yeah. Let's see. If you get 6, 7, 8 years out of a skill position guy, you're doing fine.
Yeah. He makes it through his 4-year contract. He's 28. You maybe sign him to another deal if he's still good. And
like a 3-year deal. Yeah.
Okay. Fine.
Who cares about the age? Like, just pick a guy who can play.
Yeah, that was a funny.
Boy, I'm really happy that the Steelers chose that one guy. You know, if I'm a Steelers fan, because he's 20 and he may suck at football, but he's 20. Really fired up about his 20-ness.
He has, you know, he has 4 more years to improve before he gets to Eskridge's age.
Sure, sure. Now that, and not only that, another plus side to Eskridge being 24 is he's more pro ready. He's ready to go now. And everybody has heard from Russ, he's ready to win now. We're not looking for a dude who can contribute in 4 years when he grows up to be a real boy.
Well, you know, talking with Tony Pauline on Field Goals, when I brought up the Russell Wilson trade talks, you know, I was trying to make the point of how when you have a quarterback in the kind of the middle of his career, that it would command a lot of draft capital to make that kind of trade. And he said, well, is Russ really in the middle of his career, or is he toward the end? And I thought,
who the hell said that?
Tony Pauline.
Is he okay? Did he suffer like a head injury? Does he have like COVID fog?
I don't know.
Like, is he all right?
33 does not. Is that old for? Well, I mean, it's old when we're talking about Matt Stafford for the Rams, who's been injured, you know, the last few years of his career. But for a guy who hasn't been injured, 33 and Russell Wilson, that just doesn't seem like he's that old.
No, I mean, he's got another 7 years, so
yeah,
there's that.
Yeah, the stuff continues with Russell Wilson. But let's finish off with the undrafted guys. We can get to some of the Russ stuff, some of the Aaron Rodgers stuff, some of the 49ers stuff. It all kind of fits in somehow with the nonsense of these last couple of weeks. But the other guy that I'm kind of excited about, just watching his YouTube highlights, University of Montreal offensive lineman Pierre-Olivier Lestage. Lestage? Lestage. I think it's Lestage.
Lestage. Yeah, we'll go with that. So you sent me the little clip of him making pancakes. And, I love to see an offensive lineman making breakfast, right? And just pancaking people. It was great. I love that. He's real slow.
He reminded me of Sweezy a little bit.
Nah, he reminds me of Breno, dude.
Okay.
Like, I can tell you right now, if this guy makes the roster and plays it all for us, he's going to be my favorite guy to be pissed at, because it's going to be personal foul after personal foul after personal foul, because the dude can't hear a whistle. He must be deaf. Like, there's no other way to describe it. This dude is dirty as hell, which I love, but he's going to be a total liability if you put him out there, because he has no clue when to stop.
No, he doesn't want to.
Nope.
He will stop when the guy across from him is on the ground. That is when the official whistle blows in Pierre's mind.
Yeah. And the thing about it is that it's a lot of times these things happen when it's the play's way away from him now. Like, it's all like drifted the other side of the field or whatever. This guy that he's blocking is, he's never going to be involved in that play. Like, it's beyond over. And while the guy might still be running, you know, on the other side of the field, he'll just take his opponent and just ragdoll the catfish out of him for about 15 yards and probably talking French the whole way, you know? Oh, you look at you little catfish. I got to take you over here. And then boom, you're on ground now. Ha. He's got to be talking like French smack the whole time too.
I hope so.
I wouldn't want to meet him in a dark alley. I know that.
No, not a dude. I will say nothing bad about future Hall of Fame offensive lineman Pierre-Olivier Lestage.
I love the attitude. I love the grit. There's no way. There's no way this guy's making the roster.
It was fun to watch those highlights, though. It was worth it was worth knowing that Pete Carroll called him personally to recruit him to the team to watch those YouTube highlights.
I love it. Hey, it brought a lot of joy into my life. There's no doubt about it. So I'm excited about the two receivers. This guy, no, just no.
The other guy that jumped out to me was Josh Johnson from Louisiana Monroe. And I would compare him to Travis Homer. And so he's Travis okay. Homer competition, a little quicker version of Travis Homer.
So we now have two future Hall of Fame running backs that look can perform just like TD, Terrell Davis.
Yeah. Wait,
we got two of them now?
I thought DJ Dallas was future TD.
No, that was Homer.
Okay.
Huh. Yeah.
I have trouble keeping all my Hall of Fame comparisons in my mind.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's funny too. That's another thing going through these draft comparisons, right? Like Terry, let's take Terry for an example. Mm-hmm. Everybody, look at this guy. He's Randy Moss. That's his comp. It's Randy Moss. Maybe the best receiver to ever do it. There's an argument to be made, right? Can't we just compare him with somebody who was really good as his upside? Like to me, I was like, this guy looks like Brandon Marshall.
Which is still pretty close to Hall of Fame level, but yeah.
Almost. Really good player. But nobody's ever going to mistake Brandon Marshall as being like one of the 10 greatest receivers of all time. You know, I don't know. It's just weird to me the idea that every time these comps are like the greatest to ever do it, they can't find anybody who is like really good, but not maybe the best to ever.
I like Danny Kelly from The Ringer. He does comps to dudes who aren't even football players. Like, I think he comped one guy to like an Olympic ice skater.
And love it. Love it. That's great. Because they are that ridiculous. Yeah. You know, I think the biggest thing about the comps is you're trying to paint, like if somebody had never seen this player play, right? And you're trying to paint the picture in their mind of how they move, what they kind of look like, what their game kind of, you know, resembles, then I can understand the comp thing.
Well, you need to pick a guy that one, somebody actually would know who they are.
Exactly.
And it's,
and that their style was distinctive. The way they played was distinctive.
Right. For example, Lance Zierlein of NFL.com. Mm-hmm. I think he probably does a legit job of trying to comp guys to what you might be able to expect. And there was the LSU wide receiver, Terrace Marshall, who was picked around the same area as when the Seahawks took Dwayne Eskridge. And, you know, this guy, Marshall's probably more like the mold of Tamarion Terry, you know, 6'2" and has the speed and has injury issues that was at LSU. He ends up getting drafted by Carolina, which is former position coach or former coach. The comparison of him is Josh Doctson. And if you bring up Josh Doctson's name, yeah, you know, I know, but like you tell an average person, oh yeah, he comps to Josh Doctson. And they'd be and like,
nobody out of the Washington DC area is going to know who the hell you're talking about.
Right.
Yeah.
So player comps, difficult job.
They are.
All right. What do you say we get to the second half of the show?
All right. That'd be great because now we can stop talking about guys who probably won't make the roster.
It is time to get into Aaron Rodgers talk. We can get into San Francisco 49ers quarterback talk. This is the second half of the show when we get into maybe some the not so Seahawks related stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. Where do you want to start?
I wanted to start with San Francisco, like almost off the top of the show. They pick Trey Lance with the third pick overall. A lot of people saying leading up to the 49ers pick that it was going to be Mac Jones, and that was just going to be the guy. He fit in the Kyle Shanahan system. He likes pocket quarterbacks, and Mac Jones was going to be the guy.
Right. Feel like somebody somewhere was like, no catfish way. That was happening.
Yeah. Well, a lot of 49ers fans who were in disbelief for one, and a lot of 49ers fans who were huge into Justin Fields.
And rightfully so. So the Niners gave up three first rounders to get Trey Lance.
They gave up their 12th pick overall to move up to number three overall. And they gave up two future first round picks.
Yeah. Oops. That was a bad move. Look, if they would have picked up Trey Lance in like end of the first or even at their number 12 pick, right?
Sure.
And Fields was already off the board. Okay. I mean, I get it. But here's the thing with Trey Lance. He misses way too many gimmies. Like just easy bunnies out there that you just check it down, uncorks it. Like just nowhere near the guy. Dude's running on a seam route. Got 5 yards of separation. Overthrows him by 4 or 5 yards. Mm-hmm. Like consistently. This pops up all the time with Trey Lance. And then he'll roll out and he'll throw something across the body and it's a wild throw, right? Makes that throw and then continues to miss 4 or 5 easy throws throughout the game. Not only that, but his whole game was predicated on that power run scheme that North Dakota State used. And they ran the hell out of him, man. And he's a big, thick dude. Like, I get it, you know? That catfish ain't gonna fly when you get to the next level. You're not gonna be able to do that on the regular and be a starter for more than 10 games a year. You're just not gonna do it because he's not like Lamar Jackson.
I was gonna say, that's kind of what they did with Lamar Jackson.
But he's legit fast, right? And can get out of the way of those hits. That's not Trey Lance. Mm. Trey Lance is closer to Tebow without the size. He wants to go out there and thump people. That's who he is. And that's cool. I respect the game and everything, but he's not as big as Josh Allen. He's not as big as some of these, you know, like Cam when he was doing this during his heyday.
If you think of the style of Carson Wentz, which Carson Wentz came out of that same school.
There we go.
It's very much the same style of play that Wentz was going and running into guys when he probably shouldn't have been running into guys.
Right. And Wentz was a better thrower of the football than Trey Lance. Now, look, here's what I will say about the guy. Apparently, he is a fantastic human.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I'm a big fan of the human being that is Trey Lance. I would never have given up 3 first-round draft picks to pick Trey Lance. Absolutely freaking not. I don't know that I would have done it for anybody short of Trevor in this draft. That's a lot of draft capital. So it's a good thing they have Jimmy G there ahead of him still, because it's going to take Trey Lance a minute. And when he gets on the field, maybe Shanahan's trying to shift this whole thing to a more of a wishbone old school running team. And if he is, then I see the Trey Lance fit. But if you're expecting him to be an NFL caliber quarterback that doesn't leave you wanting more week in, week out, his accuracy issues are different than Josh Allen's. They look totally different on tape.
Personality comp and maybe even quarterback comp in some ways. Jalen Hurts. Like, Jalen Hurts is an amazing dude. Like, the coolest guy. And I thought he did pretty well for the Eagles. He did better than I expected for the Eagles.
Yeah.
But he was also a second-round quarterback.
Yeah. For a quarter of a season. And the league will figure him out. There's a reason why the Eagles were kind of poking around quarterback, right? And they're not super big into committing to Jalen Hurts.
I was a little bit surprised that they didn't move up to take Fields, because they moved up to that spot ahead of the Bears, right?
Yeah. I will not understand this for the life.
They swapped with the Cowboys. The Cowboys were at 10 because the Cowboys didn't get their corner.
Yeah. Or even the Broncos at 9. The Broncos could have picked Justin Fields. I can't figure this out for the life of me. This is where the NFL draft gets weird. This is where, like, these execs and everything get way too much inside their head and also buy some of the bullshit narratives that get thrown their way. The way these quarterbacks broke down this year, Trevor Lawrence was the clear-cut number one. And you can nitpick his game. Absolutely. There's little things here and there. But the body of work at the highest level,
there isn't
a guy
year
that even compares.
Right.
Not a guy who even compares. He's as close to a surefire prospect as one can get. That doesn't mean he's surefire. It's as close as you can get. Mm-hmm. Trevor Lawrence, clear number one. Then that was Zach Wilson and Justin Fields. That was the next like group down to me. Take your pick.
And that's what I felt like a lot of the draft, like, guru type people were saying, like, depending on what you want, either one of these guys. And and Fields has probably shown a little bit more in these certain areas. And Wilson, you know, he has these skills that could, you know, depending on what you're looking for, pick your guy. Mm-hmm.
Pick your guy. And there's, because there's ups and downs to both of them, right? And then all of a sudden, there's this narrative floating out there about Fields, and maybe it's his, you know, personality and work ethic. Maybe it's Chris Sims coming out and be like, "Ooh, he's an elbow thrower. He's an elbow thrower. Can't have an elbow thrower. Are we sure? You know why I know you can have an elbow thrower? I sat and I watched Justin Fields tape, and he threw the catfish out of the ball all over the yard like a baller. Oh, you can't have the elbow thrower. Like somehow that people get like, you know, thrown off by that. Don't get me wrong. Zach Wilson's pro day and stuff in his tape, when you look at it, there's some unbelievable, just wow.
Yeah.
Just wow moments. His mobility is not going to translate quite as much as it did in college, but his arm is a big time arm, and he really can just sling it. Like just the Aaron Rodgers of the world and guys like that, who it just doesn't matter where your feet are. You just rope it. Like Zach Wilson has it. Justin Fields. Oh, the other narrative about Justin Fields that popped out. He's a one read guy. He's a one read guy. Yeah. Well, if you go back and you watch it, that is such garbage. It is such garbage. He is definitely not a one read guy. He went through his progressions pretty well on a very consistent basis. The tape they point to is against Indiana. Oh, and yeah. I think it was Coleman who did a breakdown of that, which was great. And you started going through the plays and the safety there, which I wish we would have drafted that guy, 22 from Indiana. He was money. They did all this exotic stuff to confuse Fields, mm-hmm. right? Like next level NFL stuff that he just hadn't seen before. And he made two or three mistakes and he got baited. It happens. I don't understand this idea of Fields falling. The idea that people would have, we're talking about Mac Jones and Trey Lance above Fields is freaking ridiculous. He's a pretty damn good prospect.
I was surprised. And, you know, you dial in on the quarterback stuff more than I do, but I thought for sure that with Fields falling past San Fran, that Atlanta could have taken him. The Bengals would have been the one team that you would have said, well, they got Burrow last year, so there's no way they're taking a quarterback. But then you had the Detroit Lions. You're telling me yes. that the Detroit Lions couldn't have used a young quarterback?
Unbelievable. I think I texted you or put it in the Ring of Honor or something. I was like, if I'm a Falcons fan, a Bengals fan, or a Lions fan in these last three picks, I'd be livid freaking pissed. You're going to roll again with Matt Catfishing Ryan. Like, are you serious? And I know the argument. I've heard it 1,000 times. Oh, you know, you put enough weapons around him and Matt Ryan's real good. Yeah, he's had weapons around him his entire career. Yeah, going back to Tony Gonzalez being there when he was early on, right? And Julio in the game.
Almost always had Julio.
Yeah, he's had weapons his entire career and he's still Matty freaking mediocre. And you're going to roll that out one more time when you have a chance at a guy who could be a franchise quarterback right there sitting for you at four. And I get Kyle Pitts is a good player. And I mean, that's nice and all, but there is no way I'm running it back with Matt Ryan for the next 2-3 years. I don't care the cap hit. Just don't care. Then the Bengals. That's derelict on duty not taking a tackle. How do you not take a tackle? You just watch Joe Burrow blow up his knee in 45 parts and you're saying, oh, he'll be fine next year. Let's get him the receiver he's good buddies with. That's malpractice.
Okay, so when Sewell did fall past the Bengals, the only reason I can understand Detroit going ahead and taking him is saying that, okay, if we see a tackle that's going to be the tackle for the next 10 years and, okay, we're not sold on the quarterbacks of who's available, then, you know, we're a perpetually bad team anyway. We're going to be picking in the top five probably next year anyway. So why not take the tackle that we know is going to be good and we can look for the quarterback in the years ahead?
Oh, I'll tell you why, because that's a terrible argument. And I can't believe that the Lions did this. Cannot believe it. Okay. Let me start my rebuttal with a true fact. Jared Goff is the quarterback of the Detroit Lions. Did you hear me?
You know what? You don't need to explain yourself anymore. You just won the argument.
No, right there. Okay. And then you're in a draft where you're picking, where were the Lions? Six. They were six.
Yeah. Bengals were five.
You're picking sixth in this draft, and Jared Goff is your quarterback in a draft that has
Were they seventh? Because who was sixth? I thought the Dolphins were six.
They traded back? Yeah.
I don't know. They traded back and then they traded up.
Well, whatever. Whatever they are. Six, seven, eight. Somewhere in there.
Okay.
You're not at top three. You're not picking in the top three. In a draft where there is three very quality quarterback prospects to be had, like potential legit franchise guys, right? And one of them falls to you out of the top three. You didn't have to trade up to get him. You didn't have to give up the farm. He's right there for the taking. And you passed? Because here's the thing about going and getting the quarterback later on. You're going to have to be picking in the top three or give up a crap ton of draft capital to get that quarterback later on. There's a franchise left tackle in the top 15 every freaking year. Almost always.
Yeah.
And you're going to be in there, for the next 2-3 years, right? As this team rebuilds. Why in the hell would you not take the quarterback there? There will be a tackle available later on in the future. Going up to get a quarterback later is going to be a lot harder. It's just stupid. I'd be furious.
Yeah, it was the Lions at number seven. Miami took Jalen Waddle out of Alabama at the sixth pick.
Yeah, and that's fine. I mean, look, they got to double down on the terrible Tua pick, and that's okay. I get it.
You have to.
But yeah, so for him to go past the Falcons and the Lions.
And then Carolina, who just got Sam Darnold.
I get that to a degree.
Oh, I don't think. And then to pick Horn, who's not even the best corner out of the draft.
That's the part of it that really sucks. You know, is that they did seem to whiff on the actual pick. I could have seen Fields there. And then the Broncos. Oh my God. The freaking Broncos. Your quarterbacks right now are Drew Lock, who can't hit the broadside of a barn at 10 feet away with any sort of consistency.
Teddy.
And I love me some Teddy. Don't get me wrong. I do. He's a middle of the road quarterback and you're in a division with Patrick freaking Mahomes. And you've been trying to fix this quarterback position for who knows how long. I texted Jared, our good buddy.
Yeah.
Right before Broncos fan, right before the pick. I'm like, you guys getting Fields here? Like I'm jacked for him. They had a chance of Josh Allen a couple years back. I was like, dude, you guys got to take Allen. No. Here comes the Fields pick. Here he comes. Now we're going corner. We're good. We're good. We're getting Aaron Rodgers, which we'll get to that in a minute because they ain't getting Aaron Rodgers. It was so dumb. I felt horrible for Bronco Nation right there. That was terrible. General George Patton did an awful job with that pick.
Yeah. The fact that the Broncos could get Aaron Rodgers isn't going anywhere. He's getting paid by the Green Bay Packers. That's what's going to happen.
Okay, are we ready to go to the Packer talk here?
If you're done with the draft talk.
The last guy I wanted to get with was Mac Jones.
Okay, so Mac Jones goes to the Patriots.
Right. Only place he has any inkling of a possibility to succeed. That's the only place he could have gone.
Unless, you're talking about the Chiefs, but they don't need a quarterback.
He wouldn't have succeeded there. Mahomes has to run around a little bit. Mac Jones cannot run. I mean, he's a statue quarterback in a league. You cannot have a statue quarterback anymore. His arm strength is average. His accuracy is pretty good.
That's good.
That's why it's pretty good.
Yeah. He has as good accuracy as I thought Fields did.
Sure. But with none of the other upside. So that's cool. The idea of Mac Jones being a productive player in this league, I just don't see it. He's lesser athletic Daniel Jones.
Did you go any farther down to look at any of the QBs that were taken at the end of the sixth? Because Trask went to Tampa at the end of the second.
He went before Mond, right?
He did, which was a little surprising.
Terrible pick. Trask is fine. He's fine.
I don't like him at all.
He's real slow.
Yeah. He's a backup quarterback.
If he's a quarterback, he's a backup quarterback.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I just don't see it at all. Who else? Other than Mond, who is the other guy that?
Davis Mills, who went to the Texans.
Oh God, yeah, okay, cool. The dude's got a noodle arm.
Yeah,
and he can't move.
So you like Mond?
Yeah, he's got a little athleticism to him. He's a little stiff. You know, he's a little robotic. And he's got a hose, though. He can throw the hell out of the ball. He's a chucker, though. I mean, if you like high risk, high reward, like, Kellen Mond's your guy, man. He doesn't give a crap how big the window is. He'll zip it right in there. And that comes up roses a lot for him, and then it also doesn't. So there's that. I'd take a flyer on Mond.
Yeah, for the Vikings, that makes some sense.
Absolutely. Is that where he went?
Yeah.
Oh, good for him. That's a good pick for the Vikings.
Puts a little pressure on...
On Kirk,
yeah.
Yeah, I just don't see it with Kirk Cousins. I think Kellen Mond can easily beat him out. Kellen Mond was a lot like watching Dak Prescott as a college player.
Okay.
But a little smaller. Just not as thick.
Could be a Kirk Cousins style pick, right?
Yeah, I would have taken Mond over Mac Jones.
And over Jones too.
Oh, hell yes.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, without question. The only thing that might be screwing me on this Mac Jones thing when it all comes back and I make these predictions is that he did end up with freaking Belichick.
Right. Yeah. I love the comparisons too of Tom Brady and Mac Jones with their shirts off.
Right. Yeah.
It's pretty funny. Yeah.
I don't see Mac Jones going the avocado ice cream route though. So
probably not, but no. You never know.
But so on to Adouche.
Aaron Rodgers taking over day one of the draft to get his revenge on the Green Bay Packers general manager. You can't tell me that was not planned after Aaron Rodgers was surprised 1 year earlier with the first round of the draft, with them picking a quarterback, trading up to pick Love in the first round, and Aaron Rodgers just plotting through the whole year going, I know how I'm going to get the general manager going. I'm going to orchestrate this entire thing to make it look like I want out on day one, right ahead of the first round of the draft.
100% yes, 0% no. This was completely planned. It was definitely the double birds and using his arms to make an FU symbol towards Guten
Catfish
or whatever his name is.
Guten Kunst.
Oh, okay. Guten Kunst. Yeah. It was all the birds right at him. Aaron Rodgers having a hissy fit, and then everybody being like, Schlereth coming out and being like, oh, it's a done deal to the Broncos. This is happening. What are you talking about? We've heard this a lot. What leverage does Aaron Rodgers actually have?
Oh, zero. Other than I'm not going to play. I'm going to go be the Jeopardy host.
Which he's not going to do. Like, call shenanigans on that, because like, if I'm the Packers, I'm like, yeah, okay.
See ya.
Let's see if you actually do that. Cause he ain't, You're not doing it. So what leverage does Aaron Rodgers have?
Playing. Everybody asks, like, he has this leverage of, I'm going to be a pain in your ass in the media until I get another couple of years added to my deal to, you know, show me the respect by, you know, making me the top paid guy or sitting out.
Yeah. Guess what? If he wants to, you know, cause a stink in the media for the entire season or whatever, until the GM gets fired or he gets his little extension. So what? Talk your face off. Who gives a crap? Guess what that means to me? Zip, zilch. Don't care. Because you know what doesn't affect my decisions? The fans crying. Okay. Cause you know, I'm an NFL professional. That'd be my position as a GM or a president. Be like, all right, run your mouth. Don't care. It just doesn't matter. Aaron Rodgers has zero leverage here. He's going nowhere. What do the Broncos have to give for him anyways? Oh, and not only that, the idea, what is your amount that you would give up for Aaron Rodgers? What would that look like? What is proper compensation to the Packers for Aaron Rodgers in this situation? 38 years old.
Well, and here I'll tell you my conspiracy theory that was ahead of the draft when Clint and I were talking on day two. I had a thought that the 49ers, because it was the 49ers who apparently made a call to the Green Bay Packers on draft day to say, hey, what would it take? And so my thought was that, knowing that Zach Wilson, you know, he had been pegged as going to the Jets for a long time. But you had that, you at least had the connection there to Robert Saleh, to where maybe the 49ers were getting some inside information on who the Jets were going to draft. There was the idea that maybe it could be Justin Fields at number two and not Zach Wilson. And so that if they were not set on Fields, maybe they gave up two future first round picks to go up then and get Zach Wilson, thinking that he was going to fall to number three. And so that was my thinking even before the Aaron Rodgers stuff. And so to expand on that further was that you get to the week of the draft and Saleh calls and says, oh, you know what? We were thinking Fields, but you know, we did our stuff and we're going to take Wilson. Sorry if I gave you bad information that made you move up. So then they got caught in this situation to where like, okay, well, we kind of like the other guys, so we were kind of okay with moving up to three, but we'd be willing to give up the three for Aaron Rodgers because then we're competitive for the next couple of years. And okay, Trey Lance, he might be our next favorite guy, but there's no way that we can guarantee being competitive with Trey Lance in 2021. So let's go get Aaron Rodgers. Let's make that call. And so that was my conspiracy theory based on what's come out after the draft since then. I'm not so sure that necessarily fits, but that was all my thinking that went into it. And now I don't know where we go from here.
I think that you are onto something here because I did feel like the Niners were just kind of freaking winging it. Like when they did this, it traded up to number three. There's like, yeah, let's get number three. Cause then we can choose a quarterback or not, or maybe we could trade it for, Aaron's available. Oh, well, let's try that. And just going through these consternations of like trying to figure out what they were going to actually do with the number three pick once they got it. I don't think they were settled. I don't think they had like a real plan. I think they were just winging it. But
if you're giving up two future first round picks, you have to have a plan. And it just seems weird to me that plan was Trey Lance.
Not if you're Kyle Shanahan and you feel like you're this season away from being on the hot seat. Right.
But, so to go back to what you were saying, what could it take to get Aaron Rodgers?
Yeah.
I think the number three overall pick would have been enough. But the weird thing is that the Packers, if they're that sold on Jordan Love, then what good does the third pick overall do for them? Other than, maybe you do get Kyle Pitts there at number three instead. But I feel like that's what it would have taken.
My God, you would have given up the number three pick in the draft for ancient Aaron Rodgers?
If I'm the 49ers, I do.
Wow. Wow. Unbelievable. Wait,
so you're telling me that your backside didn't pucker just a little bit when it was suggested that the 49ers were potentially thinking about trading for Aaron Rodgers. For the next 2 years, you would have been okay with them having Aaron Rodgers as their full-time quarterback.
Yes, absolutely yes, for three giant reasons. One, he's only going to be there for another 2 years or so, right? It's not like you draft like Fields and have a quarterback for another 10 years, right?
Okay.
So there's that. Number two, everybody seems to forget that Aaron Rodgers is freaking fragile. He is fragile. He's been very lucky to get through a couple seasons here. He's had multiple seasons ended by injury after injury, right? When he was younger and a little more pliable. And he's turning 38. 38. And then on top of all of that, Aaron Rodgers is the worst come from behind franchise great quarterback in the history of the NFL. So cool. Go to the Niners. And then all we have to do is in one of the two games that we face you every year to split is just get up by 7 points at some point in the game. Yeah. I'll take Aaron Rodgers on the freaking 49ers. That would have been great. The idea of giving up a first, any first for Aaron Rodgers at this stage in his career. What are you thinking? His value to me is like a second. People are talking about multiple firsts.
If you're the Broncos and you could have given up an early second to make that deal, you definitely do that as the Broncos.
You do that, but people are talking about multiple first round picks.
And you have to pay them. Yeah.
I don't get it. people. He is so overvalued right now. And not only that, but that team kind of turned to dog doo-doo until they put all that effort into the defense. Then all of a sudden, and then ran the hell out of the ball with Aaron Jones and changed their whole offense.
Well, that's why I think in the 49ers, that would be perfect because they have the defense, they have the run game.
Cool. It might be perfect for a year.
Well, if you're the, I don't know, if you're 49ers fans and you haven't had,
pretty desperate Super Bowl for a win. Super Bowl since what, 1492?
Yeah.
Was that it?
When Steve Young was your quarterback.
Right. Yeah. Where I think Steve Young settled with Brigham Young out there in Utah, right? It was right about that time.
Right about that. Right around that same time.
That's how long ago it was that they won a Super Bowl. But, makes sense. There's no way. I would have been furious as a 49ers fan if they would have done that. I'd be equally as mad that they picked Trey Lance.
I like where your thinking is, at least with Trey Lance and the 49ers. And
Trey Lance is Tyrod Taylor plus.
So as long as he doesn't get hurt, he should be an upgrade over Jimmy G.
A slight one. You go from one of the worst four quarterbacks to the Dalton level.
Oh, good job, 49ers.
And he gave up three first rounders for that. So enjoy. It's going to be a good time for you guys.
What do you say we welcome some new members of the flock?
Absolutely. Yeah, because that way we don't have to talk about the Niners anymore.
Yeah, I felt like it went on for a little too long.
Because catfish!
Great. Now, how am I going to transition from that into some awesome contributors to our show? Our executive producers, Dustin Mock, Brian Shaw, and Young Choi.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, as executive producers and having the kind of power that they do, I would imagine that their executiving skills, because that's a word, would have translated well to the 49ers if they had been like the GM and the executive there. And they definitely wouldn't have screwed it up like the Niners did.
You almost saved it. And I think that's about as well as you could have done.
Nailed it. Yeah.
Well, welcome to the flock to Joshua Kirby, who came in at $3 a month. Joshua says, "Hello, gentlemen. This is my message to go along with my new entry to the flock. I have been listening to the pod for a year and a half. I needed more Seahawks content, and that's when I found this gem of a podcast. I look forward to listening every week and hope that one day we have enough support for two podcasts a week. I've been a fan since middle school. The first game I remember was..." Oh, fan of the Seahawks, not a fan of the show.
Mm-hmm. No.
The first game I remember was the Beastquake game. What a game to remember. I am lucky to have become a fan when I did because we got blessed with Russell Wilson and a huge Super Bowl win early in my fandom. I live in California now and have to deal with dirty Niner and Rams fans trying to talk crazy. It's great to finally be a part of the flock. It was definitely time to stop freeloading so I could get the uncensored version of the pod. Thank you for all the work that you do. Best wishes from Joshua. P.S.
Catfish!
The Niners, Rams, and Cards, and any team that will try to stop us from winning the next 20 Super Bowls with Russell's sexy deep balls Wilson. Good day.
I love it, Josh. Go Hawks. And screw the four racket forever. I was just down in California working, and I thought, because I wear my Seahawks hard hat and, you know, I've got some Seahawks things going on, even in my work gear, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I would have thought being about 45 minutes north of the Bay Area, that I would maybe hear something about, you know, the Niners and like what they're doing with three and, you know, we're going down and blah, 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 blah. Yeah, not a peep. Nobody cares. Nobody cares.
I think they're all Raiders fans up there, up north.
No, there's just no fans no more at all up there.
We also have a welcome to the flock for Sabine Bernd, or Saban, in at $60 for the year. So a big thanks to Saban.
Oh, that's awesome, man. Are we going Saban or Sabine? Which way?
I think it's German. I feel like it's like Sabine.
Ooh, all right. I love it. Okay. Hard telling not knowing.
But, you know, when we had Bridget come in and I pronounced her, I gave her like the German pronunciation for her name because it's kind of spelled the German way. And I was wrong. Right. So,
oh,
yeah, it's just
so Bridget. Don't trust your gut on this. It's, is that what we're going with?
Maybe don't trust my gut. It could be wrong, but I went with it anyway. So forgive me if I screwed it up.
All right. Well, that's up to them. I would suggest not forgiving you.
Welcome to the flock to Ryan Peterson, who came in at $12.12 a month. And Ryan, he wanted to be sure that half of this at least went to Clinton for his work, because he's a big 3-in-3-out guy, Ryan is.
That's awesome. And he's not wrong on that. I mean, there was a time like early on where like we might have said that Clinton's like kind of the third wheel, right? That was early on when he was getting it figured out, right?
Yeah.
And I think now, I mean, it's more of a triumvirate, right? With the three of us than, you know, just being you.
The Seahawks podcasting Triforce.
Yeah. So I think there's merit to his wishes there.
It will be done, Ryan. And a happy birthday shout out to Tanner Roach.
Oh, no way.
His wife, Jana, came in. She donated $50 and said, happy birthday shout out for my husband, Tanner. His birthday coming up this weekend. So happy birthday, Tanner.
Dude, happy birthday. I wonder what they're doing for his birthday. Do we know what number of birthday this is, or even a range?
No, she didn't give me an age.
Okay. All right. Well, I assume that Tanner's like in his 30s. And that means you're still young enough to party and have fun, but old enough to know better a little bit too. So I don't know, something adventurous. I hope Tanner does something really cool. I think Tanner should do like a, what do they call it? It's a free base jump into the clink.
Well,
like pull a ripcord like right at the end.
Tanner does live here in Kalispell. So where's the best free basing spot? Do you go like Lone Pine?
Ooh,
although that's state park.
I think there's too many.
You might not be able to free base from Lone Pine.
No, I don't think you can do that. How about...
you can go up to Big Mountain.
Yeah, you could go up to Big Mountain. There's not a lot of big cliffs there. I think you'd have to go to Glacier. Yeah, you have to go to Glacier, get up on the garden wall.
Okay.
Right up at the Glacier Overlook, looking over Grinnell Glacier. Yeah, right into Grinnell Lake. Tanner, this is what you're doing for your birthday now, bud.
There you go. And if anybody's in Kalispell, Jana, she, I think, owns the Honey Home and Design, which is right on Main Street. So go down there and get your vintage furniture, stuff for the house.
Absolutely.
It's right next to the best toy store in town, Imagination Station. You can go down there. You know, the kids have their toy store next door. You get the stuff for the house right next door.
You get your furnishings.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a one-stop shop, there downtown Kalispell. It's amazing to watch downtown Kalispell come back.
The Friday stuff, the first Friday of the month stuff downtown, all fun.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thanks to Jana, and happy birthday, Tanner, and a thank you to Paul King, who came in with $20 and said, a thank you for the stickers, the patch, and the cups. Says, here's hoping the Will Russ Stay saga is indeed over, and we can get on with winning Super Bowls 56 through 60. I'll drink to that. Cheers, and go Hawks.
Yeah, go Hawks to the King. And I think we can safely say that the Russ drama is on the back burner for a good long time now, thanks to a douche. Like
he's taken it
really
over.
Great for a deal.
Way to hand off the baton.
Yeah.
Jason Turner came in and gave us an upgrade from $36 a year to $145.44, $12.12 a month, and says, for a deep playoff run, I think the Seahawks will need to fill a few positions, a quality number three wide receiver. Oh, see, this came in before the draft. And so now we can see how smart Jason is with how the draft
Ding!
Went.
Already got one.
Quality wide receiver three. It could be asked to step up for a few games if needed. A KJ Wright linebacker type that complements Wagner. How about just KJ Wright? A top shelf center for the future. Hopefully with the very first draft pick option the Seahawks have.
Whiff.
So if they don't trade down and get a center that outperforms Posick immediately, then it is a great draft from that point on. Anything else would be a bonus, in my opinion. Plus, one shutdown corner if possible. Ding, ding, ding.
Mm. Yeah.
This is what I hope to see the Seahawks do prior to training camp. Go Hawks.
Go Hawks. Pretty good. Pretty good by Jason.
Yeah.
That ain't
bad. And really, really, O-line, wide receiver, corner.
Yeah.
There you go.
All three things kind of sort of addressed.
See, Jason just needed to be a little bit more vague and say O-line with that other pick rather than really focusing on center.
Well, unless you're a talking head on TV, you don't know all those little tricks, right?
That's true. You and I were vets at this, so we We know.
Yeah. We know how to like get vague enough, just like you said, to not have, you know, it pinned on me right later on. But then I don't give a catfish sometimes, and I'll just say the thing specifically.
Right.
And, you know, hope for the best, because sometimes you got to be declarative. Oh, yeah. I know that's weird to you, but sometimes you do.
Who is the one that just declared early on in the show that when we talk about our future Hall of Fame cornerback, Trey Brown, that we refer to him in that manner? So don't get on me about this non-declaration stuff.
Okay. You know what? That was a personal growth by you, and I take it back. You are growing as a human, and I appreciate it.
Eric Trench, growing as a human and the donor of our show, upgraded from 36 to 145, 44, 12, 12 a month. So thanks to Eric.
Dude, this Ring of Honor is getting ridiculous, like in the best way that you can think of in terms of ridiculous.
All awesome people.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
Also, we're getting into crypto now.
What?
Yeah, we got a donation of 51 Satoshis.
Oh.
Yeah.
Which okay.
Satoshis are a part of Bitcoin. Like, that's how you, if it's a smaller amount of Bitcoin, you refer to it as Satoshis.
Oh.
And we got 51 of them.
All right. I will say that at one of the mills that I was working at these last 2 weeks, there's a dude there that was really into the crypto thing.
Yeah.
And this could be the biggest donation that we've ever received, if we know when to cash out correctly.
I just need to go ahead and look up what the current exchange is. Let's see. Satoshis to USD. And let's see. One Satoshi. I'm going to need a calculator. So 51 equals point. It's 3 cents. We got 3 cents.
Hell yeah, man.
And, you know, the way you could do this, you can actually, if you listen through the PodFriend app, somehow it works that we get Bitcoin when people listen through the PodFriend app. And I think
that's a thing.
Yeah. I think
it's like
they set it up.
Bitcoin.
They're trying to figure out a way for people who have podcasts. So that way, if you just want to throw like a bunch of money and say, this is my podcasting budget, and kind of dole it out to all the shows that you listen to.
Yeah.
I think there's some apps that are trying to figure out how to do that.
Oh, well, that's interesting. Yeah. Okay.
So there it
is. Cool beans. Yeah. Well, I don't know how to take that now that I realize what the exchange rate is right now. Is that like somebody, you know, they order a $100 meal, right? And then tip like 50 cents? Is that what this is? Or is this like, dudes, just hang on. This 3 cents, you're going to be quadrillionaires in like two years.
Put it away. Yeah. And then if this were, you know, like 5,000 Dogecoin, like a year ago, we'd be able to quit the show now.
Okay. Shouldn't it be like Doggy Coin?
No, it's
isn't that how that should be pronounced? No. Isn't the logo a dog even?
It is. Yeah.
Yeah. It should be Doggy Coin. Dogecoin. Okay. They don't even know how to name their thing right.
They're doing okay right now, apparently.
Yeah, I guess. We'll see.
Out of all the crypto that I would tend to stay away from, it would be the one that was created as a goof and they just made a buttload of it. And now people are all of a sudden buying it. That's the one I had some, but I was like, okay, this is.
No, you didn't.
You didn't
have any.
Well,
you never have any of this crypto stuff. You never have it in your hands.
Well, now I have real money because of it. So because I got some and then I sold it and then it went up since then, but you know,
whatever. Yeah.
I made 50 bucks off the little bit that I had.
Look, and you don't like gambling.
Yeah, it's investing. It's totally different.
Oh, those two terms are totally different.
If you want to invest in this show, get in the flock.com.
You said invest. I said or gamble.
It's kind of a gamble, you know.
Yeah, you never know. You never know what you're going to get. That's for sure.
We didn't know if we were going to be here this week because of Kyle Shanahan. You know, it's the same thing week to week for us. It's a gamble.
Just uncertainty. Brittany's out playing with fire in the woods right now. I mean,
she
could burn this whole place down in a minute. Yeah.
Never know.
You never know.
And you never know if you could win the tiny piece of Seahawks stuff for May. Mm-hmm. And actually, tiny pieces plural, because this is a Russell Wilson and Rashad Penny. Tiny pieces of Seahawks stuff. You got the white jersey for Russ. You got the blue piece of jersey for Penny. And it is, numbered 44 of 99.
Wow. Well, those are game-worn jerseys that they cut up?
It says, the enclosed player-worn materials are guaranteed by Panini America.
Wow. That would have been hard to come by, I would think. At least the Penny jerseys, right? Like what, there's maybe three of them out there that they could have cut up?
Well, it says player worn, so it could be like they just have the dude throw on the jersey and then take it off and then they cut it up for the card.
Oh, well, maybe.
I don't know. I don't know how that works.
Yeah, I don't either. But if like Penny had to do football things in the jersey for it to be considered player worn, I get
be in the locker three. Room getting his ankles taped up. And yeah, that's
right.
He wore it.
He wore it. Okay.
Anyway, tinypiecesofseahawksstuff.com. You can enter there. Just type in Go Hawks and you will be among the people to be a part of that when we select that at the end of the month.
Mm-hmm. And with the Penny jersey in there, I think it does make it more rare.
Right.
There's a value in that.
We have to commemorate his not getting his fifth year option this month.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. This is the part where I say again, I'm really sad I was right on that pick.
Yeah, you don't want to be right.
I didn't, but I was.
Oh, we got an offer here from Garen Taylor. Says, hey guys.
Yeah.
I was sitting in the barbecue trailer listening to the latest pod, and I thought to myself, this is why I listen to these two. I love it when I notice from your perspective about something I did not even think of in regards to why something was done or how, for instance, a trade worked out. The move from Reed and his contract for Gabe Jackson and an identical contract was a great way to look at it. Here's something else to look at from a different perspective. My wife and I have been married for 25 years, and way back, just after we got married, my wife turned to me and asked me why my family says a certain phrase. She noticed that my whole family said the word unthaw for taking things out of the freezer. I said, I do not understand what the problem was since I had said this my whole life. She proceeds to explain to me that if you thaw something, it becomes not frozen. If you unthaw something, then essentially you're saying that you are going to freeze it again. This blew my mind after I realized something I had said my whole life was exactly wrong. Why am I telling you this? During this last pod, Adam gives us his better at life than Skipper Blameless. Pretty sure I said that right. And says, Spring, I am so happy I am sitting here in the cabin right now. The sun is shining. The snow is melting. All the projects I have been dreaming of can now be done instead of this catfish snow that it currently is. I'm just waiting for the ground to unthaw. Sorry, I could not resist. Do better. To finish up, I would like to say that anyone who has a chance to stop by the barbecue trailer and mentions the Seahawkers podcast can have one pulled pork sandwich for free. Go Hawks from Garen Taylor.
Go Hawks. Actually, I was going to reach out to Garen because I'll be seeing him not this upcoming weekend, but probably the weekend after that. I'm going to come and bother him or like early in the week. I don't know if he's open on the weekends or not, but Britt and I will be coming back from a mill job out that direction. And I wanted to stop by and harass the poor bastard.
Well, there you go. And you see, you don't even have to live in Kellogg, Idaho. You know that when you're driving through on I-90, watch for, and you know, they have those Dave Smith Motors signs everywhere, the big pink signs of the car dealership. So you look for, and once you start to see those, you start thinking guaranteed barbecue. Remember, stop there, get some guaranteed barbecue, and he's going to give you a pulled pork sandwich.
Heck yeah. That part's
but
amazing.
But then you accept the pulled pork sandwich, but then you buy the ribs because the ribs are awesome.
Yeah, how could if you eat those ribs with a frown, you're doing it wrong. I'll put it to you that way.
See, he's hooking our. If you've listened to this far in the show and you know that driving through Kellogg, Idaho, you can get free pulled pork. I mean, it just made your day better.
Yeah, exactly. You're welcome, everybody. And also, you can be certain that Garen will not unthaw your pulled pork before you get there.
Right. What do you say we get on to some do better and better at life?
All right, man. My do better this week is for our good buddy, Jared Tim, Broncos fan, for having exactly this reaction when I called and was like, you guys passed on Fields? I mean, we're getting Aaron Rodgers, so I was like, no, you're not.
He's
like,
so sure.
I don't know. He came out this morning and said he was never going to play for the Packers again. So, and I'm fine with the corner, you know, corner's good. So there was that. There was that part of his piss poor reaction. He should have been furious as a fan that his team still can't get quarterback right, because apparently John Elway, the only quarterback he sees is his own reflection in the mirror every morning. He still can't recognize a quarterback for the life of him. He should be furious with that. But maybe the reason he wasn't is because when I talked to him on the phone, he was sounding a little sick. Wasn't up to par. Wasn't his full Jared catfish headedness.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. It's like, what, are you sick? He's like, yeah, I don't know. Don't know what's going on. I was like, you've got the vid. He's like, nah, I don't got the vid. I was like, yeah, you do. You got the vid. And so in the middle of this podcast, as we've been recording, I had a text flash up right over Brandon's face that said, G-Rod, I got the vid.
Aww.
That's what he got the vid at the very end of all this. He went this whole time, no vid. And then he gets to the end, gets the vid. That's pathetic. Avoid the vid. You're almost to the finish line. Jared, Tim, do better.
How could you in Montana, I don't know if you saw this, Montana yeah. breweries are giving away free beer for COVID vaccines. Like, you bring in your vaccine card, they will give you free beer.
Yeah.
So what's your excuse?
I don't know. And then not only that, but like, for example, the county that I'm in right now, one active case, one.
Well, but like he's in Billings, and that's kind of been.
Yeah,
but it's kind of a cesspool, the toughest times.
That's what I'm saying. And he got it at the end. Wasn't even mad about it. Maybe that's what brought him down, to not be mad about his lack of QBs on his team. I don't know.
Maybe.
But he just needs to do better all the way around. He's just screwing up that day.
Do better, Jared. And if it was anybody but Jared, we wouldn't be giving them a hard time. But also, get well soon, buddy.
Yeah.
Well, my do better is for this Russell Wilson talk not being over. ESPN, they can't let it go, Adam.
Nope.
Because not only will they not give up on Russ, now they have to loop in the Aaron Rodgers stuff to say, hey, maybe both teams can solve their problems by Aaron Rodgers now being traded to the Seahawks. That would solve everybody's problems, right?
Sure.
Let's go to Seattle here. This is a major wild card. Ooh. Maybe he wants to be in the NFC West with the San Francisco 49ers. That's right. Not going to happen now. So let's go Seattle. I spoke to one exec who floated Seattle for two reasons. John Schneider, the GM, has longstanding ties in Green Bay, and John Schneider has been unafraid to talk about a potential deal for Russell Wilson. He's talked to the Cleveland Browns in the past. He talked to the Bears most recently before they signed Andy Dalton. So it's been fluid there. Now, the relationship with Russell Wilson in Seattle has been mended. He's talked to Pete Carroll a lot. He likes the direction of the team. They've added some pieces in free agency. But what better player-for-player swap could you get than Russell Wilson for Aaron Rodgers?
What better player-for-player swap could you get? One, you brought up earlier how it makes no sense or how you would be ecstatic if he went to the San Francisco 49ers because, one, he's old and he never comes back. Seahawks fans should be livid if he comes to Seattle, because what does Pete Carroll play? He always plays from behind. And so if you put Aaron Rodgers, pair him with Pete Carroll to where they're always going down by 7 points right away, the Seahawks would be 4-0.
Do it right. Do it right.
The Seahawks would be 4-13 with Aaron Rodgers. So for bringing this up, just linking Aaron Rodgers lazily to Seattle because John Schneider has a connection with the Packers and, oh, Russell Wilson's not happy. So, hey, why not make this all better by bringing Russell Wilson to Green Bay? And even though they have Jordan Love, who their supporter is apparently excited about, and that's what Aaron Rodgers is all mad about anyway. It makes no sense. Stop trying to make sense of it. Do better.
Yeah, and not only that, but I love the part in the middle there. Well, John Schneider talked to the Bears. He talked to this team. He talked to that team. He talked to all the teams. Talked to teams all over the place. John Schneider, talk about trading Russell Wilson. Yeah, well, I don't know. I listened to his press conference and they asked him, hey, do you talk to anybody about trade? No.
Well, he didn't negotiate with teams. So he talked to teams. They threw out the trade potential with him, but they weren't negotiating.
Yeah. Right. Okay. All right. Yeah. Well, that gets into semantics, I guess.
Yeah,
all right.
There's a little bit of semantics going on in the press conference.
But with that said, the idea of trading Russ at 32 for Aaron Rodgers at 38 is just, it's dumb.
I don't know. According to Tony Pauline, both these guys are pretty much at the end of their career with at those ages.
Guess so. I don't know.
On to Better at Life.
All right. My Better at Life than Skip Bayless this week is somebody who's certainly not even close to the end of their career and maybe starting a new one. My Better at Life this week is for DK Metcalf. He has announced he's going to try out for the Olympics on the 100-meter sprint. I love this. I love that he wants to go out and try something a little different. See if that, hunting down Buda Baker speed is, legit in everything. Well, the thing is that what's the USATF? That must be the United States Association of Track and Field. Yeah, we're going with, They had a tweet back that said, for everyone asking if we have a spot open on our relay team for at DKM14, at NFL players are welcome to come test their speed against real speed next year at the Olympic trials. I love that. They throw smack right back at him. Oh, you think you can come do what we do? Well, if you want to come test your speed against some real speed, come on down, DK. We'll let you do it. I love this all the way around. I love the trash talk from the track folks. I love the idea that DK is going to go out there, try to win a medal for the Seahawks and America. I love it all. Better at life than Skip Bayless.
Yeah, I think the announcement, though, him announcing that he was doing it was just, it was more of an Under Armour commercial as he was dropping the cleats onto the track. But yeah, that was his announcement.
He's going to do it.
He signed up. I looked at the sign-up page, and he is actually slated to do it. Because I thought he was just promoting the event, like, oh, hey, DK Metcalf's going to be here, and then he wasn't actually going to run. But see, it sounds like he's actually going to run. I also found out what the A stands for in USATF.
It's not Adam?
No.
Or catfish!
No.
No? Okay.
America.
They don't know how to spell America. It starts with an apostrophe. I know,
it's totally different here in Montana.
Yeah.
My Better at Life this week is for Dan Hanzus. Because the Seahawks signed former Arizona first-round pick, Robert Kendiche. We talked about it, and they signed him last week, and really, the most notable accomplishment of Kendiche came even before his NFL career when he fell out a window leading up to the NFL draft.
That's right.
Led Dan Hanzus to a legendary song, which he remixed and redid for the Around the NFL podcast. And I got to slow this down for the intro because we're playing it here.
Kendiche, Kendiche, Kendiche. Why did you fall out that window? We thought you fell out of our league, but you're back, and that's sweet. And it's all because of Pete. Pete Carroll is the savior of Kendiche. Kendiche, Kendiche, Kendiche. You fell out that window, but we fell for you. Take this chance. Hide the door. Walk on through. Take this chance. Hide that door. The window's not for you.
Dan Hanzus and the stylings from the Around the NFL podcast. Yes, it may end up being, this song, Adam, may end up being Kendiche's most important contribution to the Seattle Seahawks. I mean, hopefully not, but it's possible. And so if all we get out of it is this song, Dan Hanzus of Around the NFL, Better at Life than Skip Bayless.
Yeah. That was moderately funny. I mean, what song is that supposed to be like originally?
I think they just found like a piano track. I don't know.
Oh, okay. So this is a total Dan Hanzus original.
I hope so, because if not, we're going to get flagged by YouTube for copyright violation for playing the piano music.
Well, screw them, because that was a banger, and I think it was a great way to end the show.
And I think with that,
there's only one thing left to say.
Go Hawks.
Go Hawks.